English Listening Comprehension Test, Autumn 2002, Basic Level. This test is in four parts. In parts 1, 2, and 3, you will answer the questions asked in the booklet by choosing the correct alternative answer according to what you have heard. Mark each answer on the answer sheet. The test is about to begin. Listen to the first part straight through.
Have you ever heard a story about a baby born in the top of a tree? Well, I certainly haven't. But here's Anne Dunes to relate this remarkable tale to us.
Rosita Mabuyango, born in the top of a tree, came to symbolize all of the hope that came out of the horrible flood in Mozambique. The Limpopo River rose so quickly that the villagers had to race for the trees. Not all made it. Rosita's mother, Carolina, said that her grandmother was one of the unfortunate ones. In a land of hard poverty like Mozambique, that doesn't bring as much sympathy as you might think. Mozambique could only afford to help the victims of the flood by giving each family a sack of free seed so they could start growing their own food again. Yet the Mabuyango family was singled out for much more. They now have a new three-bedroom house with tiled floors, tiled bathroom, and even running water. Electricity should be installed next month. By Western standards, it's simple, but it's a palace in the eyes of the local villagers who live in huts. The governor of Gaza province says that it's only fair that the Mabuyangos have been treated so much better than their neighbors because Carolina was the woman who gave birth on the top of a tree. Carolina's brother-in-law, Carlito, was the hero behind the rescue. He was in the same tree with Carolina. When they had been there for 3 days with no food or water, and knowing the birth was about to start, he decided to swim her to a tree where there were older women from the village. They would know what to do with the birth. He himself then swam to dry ground, where he gained the attention of a helicopter. Moments later, a young South African sergeant was lowered into the treetop and with his pocket scissors cut the umbilical cord. He was absolutely terrified that he would drop either the mother or the baby. He didn't. The helicopter crew took the two to a hospital for a quick checkup. Finding both in good shape, they sent Carolina away. She then lived for a time under a tree with some other women. But she could not remain anonymous for long, as the whole scene had been recorded on video and was broadcast around the world that very same day. She was innocent of all knowledge of her fame, talking about it as if giving birth in a treetop were an everyday event. Little did she know. Last May, Carolina and Rosita were taken on fundraising trips to Britain and the U.S. She has no idea of how much the $300 million raised has helped the people of her impoverished country. Yet the money has almost all come in based on this one story. If her neighbors knew how much she's done to help them, they wouldn't be jealous. And Carolina, who like her neighbors is illiterate, is to start school next month at the age of 23. So that's a big step, but not as big as the step she took out of that treetop last year.
Now listen to the same discussion in 5 sections. Look at questions 1 and 2.
Have you ever heard a story about a baby born in the top of a tree? Well, I certainly haven't. But here's Anne Dunes to relate this remarkable tale to us.
Rosita Mabuyango, born in the top of a tree, came to symbolize all of the hope that came out of the horrible flood in Mozambique. The Limpopo River rose so quickly that the villagers had to race for the trees. Not all made it. Rosita's mother, Carolina, said that her grandmother was one of the unfortunate ones. In a land of hard poverty like Mozambique, that doesn't bring as much sympathy as you might think.
Answer questions 1 and 2. Look questions 3 and 4.
Mozambique could only afford to help the victims of the flood by giving each family a sack of free seed so they could start growing their own food again. Yet the Mabuyango family was singled out for much more. They now have a new three-bedroom house with tiled floors, tiled bathroom, and even running water. Electricity should be installed next month. By Western standards, it's simple, but it's a palace in the eyes of the local villagers who live in huts. The governor of Gaza province says that it's only fair that the Mabuyangos have been treated so much better than their neighbors because Carolina was the woman who gave birth on the top of a tree.
Answer questions 3 and 4. Then look at questions 5 and 6.
Carolina's brother-in-law, Carlito, was the hero behind the rescue. He was in the same tree with Carolina. When they had been there for 3 days with no food or water, and knowing the birth was about to start, he decided to swim her to a tree where there were older women from the village. They would know what to do with the birth. He himself then swam to dry ground, where he gained the attention of a helicopter. Moments later, a young South African sergeant was lowered into the treetop and with his pocket scissors cut the umbilical cord. He was absolutely terrified that he would drop either the mother or the baby. He didn't.
Answer questions 5 and 6. Then look at questions 7 and 8.
The helicopter crew took the two to a hospital for a quick checkup. Finding both in good shape, they sent Carolina away. She then lived for a time under a tree with some other women. But she could not remain anonymous for long, as the whole scene had been recorded on video and was broadcast around the world that very same day. She was innocent of all knowledge of her fame, talking about it as if giving birth in a treetop were an everyday event. Little did she know.
Answer questions 7 and 8. Then look at questions 9 and 10.
Last May, Carolina and Rosita were taken on fundraising trips to Britain and the U.S. She has no idea of how much the $300 million raised has helped the people of her impoverished country. Yet the money has almost all come in based on this one story. If her neighbors knew how much she's done to help them, they wouldn't be jealous. And Carolina, who like her neighbors is illiterate, is to start school next month at the age of 23. So that's a big step, but not as big as the step she took out of that treetop last year.
Answer questions 9 and 10. This is the second part of the test. You will hear this part twice. Listen to this part straight through.
Hello, this is Mike Marshall of Radio South. I'm speaking to you today from Nightingale Nursery in London. The new nursery looks lovely in the early sunlight. Nightingale Nursery and Preschool has been open for 8 months now. It was based on a successful application to the City Council and the Education Authorities by Deputy Head Lisa Murphy. In just a few moments, the first children will be rushing in, ready to begin the day. What's Nightingale like now, and what was it like before? Well, let me give you a bit of an idea. Nightingale Nursery is in Hackney. That's East London for listeners unfamiliar with the area. Hackney's a problematic area, and this neighbourhood's been one of the most troubled parts of Hackney. Up until last year, the nursery was housed in a concrete bunker nearby. It was a former youth club that had been turned into a nursery 25 years ago on a temporary basis, they said. Hard to believe. Only two windows in the whole building. But now, there are lovely windows, low-level windows for the children everywhere. And there's grass to look at on every side of the pleasant modern building. The exterior walls are painted lilac or covered with wood, Canadian cedar, which smells and feels nice. Inside you find yellow walls, well, warm colours throughout. The space is very child-oriented, but some of the errors of the recent past have been avoided. For example, sinks of different heights for different ages. With those, the children all wanted to wash their hands in the highest. Hey, I'm bigger than you, you know. But of course, there are those tiny toilets adults find so adorable and children so useful. Then the heating is underfloor, so no boxing in of hot radiators and their sharp edges is needed. The building's surrounded on two sides by a large outside roof, which lowers heating and cooling costs. And it gives children a wonderful place to play outside, whatever the weather. Today, there's no need of it, unless it's so hot in the afternoon that children seek out the shade. There's a garden with a waterfall and things that move and make noise. Everything's designed to interest the child. Older nurseries and preschools were often not particularly interesting. But there's a whole section inside Nightingale forbidden to adults. A two-story area with low ramps and tunnels and places you can only snake into. Children need to be challenged, learn to evaluate and take risks at their own level. Understand what works for them. A two-year-old cannot do the things a three-year-old can. This works at both the physical and the mental level. It's good to see a school that recognizes this. Once again, this is Mike Marshall at Nightingale Nursery, and good morning to you.
Now listen to the same presentation in five sections. Look at questions 11 and 12.
Hello, this is Mike Marshall of Radio South. I'm speaking to you today from Nightingale Nursery in London. The new nursery looks lovely in the early sunlight. Nightingale Nursery and Preschool's been open for 8 months now. It was based on a successful application to the City Council and the Education Authorities by Deputy Head Lisa Murphy. In just a few moments, the first children will be rushing in, ready to begin the day. What's Nightingale like now, and what was it like before? Well, let me give you a bit of an idea.
Answer questions 11 and 12, then look at questions 13 and 14.
Nightingale Nursery is in Hackney. That's East London for listeners unfamiliar with the area. Hackney's a problematic area, and this neighbourhood's been one of the most troubled parts of Hackney. Up until last year, the nursery was housed in a concrete bunker nearby. It was a former youth club that had been turned into a nursery 25 years ago on a temporary basis, they said. Hard to believe. Only two windows in the whole building. But now, there are lovely windows, low-level windows for the children everywhere.
Answer questions 13 and 14. Look at questions 15 and 16.
And there's grass to look at, on every side of the pleasant modern building. The exterior walls are painted lilac or covered with wood, Canadian cedar, which smells and feels nice. Inside you find yellow walls, well, warm colours throughout. The space is very child-oriented. But some of the errors of the recent past have been avoided. For example, sinks of different heights for different ages. With those, the children all wanted to wash their hands in the highest. Hey, I'm bigger than you, you know. But of course, there are those tiny toilets adults find so adorable and children so useful.
Answer questions 15 and 16, then look at questions 17 and 18.
Then the heating is underfloor, so no boxing in of hot radiators and their sharp edges is needed. The building's surrounded on two sides by a large outside roof, which lowers heating and cooling costs. And it gives children a wonderful place to play outside whatever the weather. Today there's no need of it, unless it's so hot in the afternoon that children seek out the shade. There's a garden with a waterfall and things that move and make noise. Everything's designed to interest the child.
Answer questions 17 and 18, then look at questions 19 and 20.
Older nurseries and preschools were often not particularly interesting. But there's a whole section inside Nightingale forbidden to adults. A two-story area with low ramps and tunnels and places you can only snake into. Children need to be challenged, learn to evaluate and take risks at their own level. Understand what works for them. A two-year-old cannot do the things a three-year-old can. This works at both the physical and the mental level. It's good to see a school that recognises this. Once again, this is Mike Marshall at Nightingale Nursery, and good morning to you.
Answer questions 19 and 20. This is the third part of the test. In this part, you will hear 10 short dialogues. You will hear each of them once only. Look at question 21.
At the rate we're going, we'll all die before we're 50.
Yes, I know. This overtime's killing me.
No, not that. I was just reading an article which said that 20% of children have a stress-related illness, and many will have nervous breakdowns before they enter the workforce.
You don't say. That's unbelievable.
Answer question 21. Look at question 22.
Now, Gina, I still have more to say about what happened last night.
Do we have to go through all that again?
Well, okay. Maybe tomorrow?
No.
Okay.
Answer question 22, then look at question 23.
Do you have any idea why Jack left Sherry?
Well, I've put two and two together, and I think it's got something to do with her mother.
Her mother? That doesn't sound very realistic.
Answer question 23. Look at question 24.
Are you okay? What's going on?
That Bob, he's a case. He really puts me off.
That's true. Why, just yesterday he was complaining about the quality of our service to a customer. Can you imagine? That's terrible.
Answer question 24, then look at question 25.
Oh, no, I've still got so much work to do.
But the history final examination was changed to yesterday. Didn't they tell you?
You wouldn't be trying to kid me, would you?
No. Didn't you go?
Answer question 25. Look at question 26.
Have you heard the news about Margaret and Roger?
Yes. Well, is it really true? Why, they've known each other for ages.
Yep, they have. And yes, it's really true.
But I thought they were only good friends. Weren't they even classmates in school?
Oh, yes. And you might have thought that would have stopped them from falling for each other. But last week, something happened.
Yes. Isn't it wonderful?
Answer question 26, then look at question 27.
Have you heard what Janet's been doing?
No, what?
She buys low-fat meals, throws away the packaging and gives them to her husband as regular meals.
You don't say.
Yes. He's lost 12 kilos and hasn't even noticed.
Answer question 27. Look at question 28.
Did you hear?
What?
Sheila got a new set of wheels last week.
No, you don't say. What color is it?
Bright red, like her hair. Her father bought it for her.
Well, I wouldn't suppose a high school student would have that much money.
But the main thing is that she'll be able to take us anywhere we want to go now.
Answer question 28. Look at question 29.
I recently purchased a flat in London. It was already fitted with triple-locked steel doors and heavily barred windows. That was actually the main point in the sales brochure.
Yeah? But can you feel comfortable living there?
Well, I'll be moving in next week. Ask me after that.
Answer question 29. Look at question 30.
Any news? Hear anything? Come on, tell me about it.
Well, Sheila finally walked out on Sam.
Oh, yeah. It hit him like a ton of bricks.
I'd say.
Answer question 30. This is the fourth part of the test. There are five sections. Each section is a separate story. You'll hear each section twice, and then you will have time to answer that section. Then you will go on to the next section. You will write in Finnish or Swedish. You must write your answers on the special answer sheet. Question A. Listen to the first section.
An experiment at Tama Zoo in Tokyo to see whether monkeys could copy humans proved successful after a monkey called Jim bought himself a can of Coke from a vending machine. The can was immediately stolen from him by another monkey.
Now listen to the section again, and then answer question A.
An experiment at Tama Zoo in Tokyo to see whether monkeys could copy humans proved successful after a monkey called Jim bought himself a can of Coke from a vending machine. The can was immediately stolen from him by another monkey.
Question B. Listen to the next section.
What is normally the high season for tourism in Britain turned out to be drearily low in the summer of 2001 due to the foot and mouth disease, one of the biggest crises ever to have hit Britain's tourism industry. Thousands of people from the United States and France, Britain's biggest markets, cancelled their summer bookings despite the fact that the disease was under control. So while it was a bad time to be a travel agent in Britain, it was an excellent time to be an American traveller because of the lower prices.
Now listen to this section again, and then answer question B.
What is normally the high season for tourism in Britain turned out to be drearily low in the summer of 2001 due to the foot and mouth disease, one of the biggest crises ever to have hit Britain's tourism industry. Thousands of people from the United States and France, Britain's biggest markets, cancelled their summer bookings despite the fact that the disease was under control. So while it was a bad time to be a travel agent in Britain, it was an excellent time to be an American traveller because of the lower prices.
Question C. Listen to the next section.
The modern outdoorsy city of Perth has so many beaches that there's one for just everybody. The Western Australian coastline stretches north from the city for miles, white and straight. The local people have divided it up into shorter beaches for different users: families, surfers, nudists and pets. When there, tell your dog to look for the road sign saying Dog Beach.
Now listen to this section again, and then answer question C.
The modern outdoorsy city of Perth has so many beaches that there's one for just everybody. The Western Australian coastline stretches north from the city for miles, white and straight. The local people have divided it up into shorter beaches for different users: families, surfers, nudists and pets. When there, tell your dog to look for the road sign saying Dog Beach.
Question D. Listen to the next section.
Alisa Casuto, a teacher in Manhattan, grew up going to sleepaway camp all summer. Then she became a grown-up and gave it all up, until she found a place in Connecticut, a camp for adults. It offers the traditional outdoor activities program with instruction, which is required of an adult camp. There are numerous other special adult camps, ranging from golf, tennis, and baseball, to ballroom dancing and racing.
Now listen to this section again, and then answer question D.
Alisa Casuto, a teacher in Manhattan, grew up going to sleepaway camp all summer. Then she became a grown-up and gave it all up, until she found a place in Connecticut, a camp for adults. It offers the traditional outdoor activities program with instruction, which is required of an adult camp. There are numerous other special adult camps, ranging from golf, tennis, and baseball, to ballroom dancing and racing.
Question E. Listen to the next section.
My father, what kind of man was he? A private man, one who never spoke about his mother and father. He was a man whose father had rejected him, a man with no heroes, a man who drove a Pontiac and mowed his own lawn. He was a husband who raised neither hand nor voice against his wife. My father had soft brown eyes, but he beat us children with a stick. My father had strong opinions and expressed them loudly. I never knew what he felt about himself.
Now listen to this section again, and then answer question E.
My father, what kind of man was he? A private man, one who never spoke about his mother and father. He was a man whose father had rejected him, a man with no heroes, a man who drove a Pontiac and mowed his own lawn. He was a husband who raised neither hand nor voice against his wife. My father had soft brown eyes, but he beat us children with a stick. My father had strong opinions and expressed them loudly. I never knew what he felt about himself.
This is the end of the test. You will now have about 8 minutes in which to blacken with a pencil the ovals indicating your answers and to check the written answers. Remember to make sure you have written the following information on your answer sheet: your name and number, and the name and number of your school. Also make sure that the information needed for the exam has been carefully marked in. Thank you.